Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking about prosecuting Israel for genocide. We are talking with the terrific independent journalist Sam Husseini. Sam is on Substack at Husseini.substack.com. You can find him all over the internet, wearing many hats, doing many important jobs as an independent journalist and advocate. Sam Husseini, welcome back to Talk World Radio.
Thank you so much for inviting me, David.
Thanks. I think you were the best possible person to invite on a very timely topic, which is prosecuting the crime of genocide, which has been publicly, shamelessly before our eyes for months. It's about time someone tried to prosecute it. What's exactly happening, and why has it taken this long to happen?
It's taken a while to happen, longer than it should have, in part, I think, because the International Criminal Court prosecutor went off to outside of Gaza and basically, you know, had this photo op saying, "I'm the cop on the beat," basically. So a lot of people, a lot of countries, and a lot of groups went to the ICC, the International Criminal Court, hoping that that would, you know, have some kind of redress. But nothing was forthcoming, and that was kind of predictable. The ICC has been something of a scam. It has been basically an instrument of U.S. policy. It's gone after U.S. Again, it's gone after African governmental officials, and then they went after Putin. It's never gone after U.S. officials, NATO officials, or Israel or any U.S. ally, and so people were sort of ignoring this other legal route, which is the International Court of Justice. Now, the International Court of Justice doesn't prosecute individuals, but it adjudicates matters between two states. So you have South Africa, which is a signatory to the Genocide Convention, and you have Israel, which is a signatory to the Genocide Convention. So South Africa can effectively sue Israel, saying you are violating the Genocide Convention. And they both have agreed to, in the past, to allowing the ICJ to adjudicate such matters. So that's why you have a hearing this week where South Africa is going to present its case. South Africa has already presented its case, actually, in terms of the very detailed 84-page, highly footnoted application, they call it, documenting the background of the situation, documenting Israel's actions since October, and documenting Israeli government statements of genocidal intent.
Why do you think, I mean, many of us at the prompting of yourself and others had been pushing and are still pushing for governments to do this and to do it in support of South Africa now that it has done it. Why do you think South Africa was the one nation? There are 200 countries. They've all got eyes and ears. Why only South Africa?
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the pieces that I wrote, and I really didn't want to write it, was documenting how all of these countries were calling Israel, what Israel was doing, genocide. Brazil, Bolivia, Algeria, Jordan, so on and so forth. But none of them would actually invoke the convention. You know, you're saying somebody's breaking a law, but you're not, invoking the law. So it was really quite appalling. South Africa, I think in part because of the history of it, that it suffered under apartheid. So I think that it has paid particular attention to Palestine. You go back to statements by Nelson Mandela and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, towering figures in South Africa who would often say, our freedom is not complete until Palestine is free, and similar statements. And they also have, I think, a very highly capable legal team in South Africa that was able to pull this together. I think it's no small task.
Indeed, quite a lengthy filing full of footnotes. Any slight error anywhere in there, and somebody's going to catch hell. Maybe part of why other nations are more reluctant to do it. But can you talk a little bit for people who haven't read it about what's in South Africa's filing? I mean, this is not just documentation of deaths and injuries, but also of genocidal intent publicly promoted by top Israeli officials, right?
There are several components to it, and I've gone through it several times, and I still, I can't retain it all, to be honest with you. I mean, there's the background part of it, which I found fascinating. They went through all of the previous UN reports during past times that Israel attacked Gaza. Israel has done this repeatedly. They call it mowing the lawn, and they highlight some of the pertinent parts of that. For example, they excerpt from a report from 2010 about the attack that happened shortly before then, where Israel back then was saying Hamas is, firing rockets from hospitals, and that's why we have to attack hospitals. Where the well, the UN went in afterwards and said we found no evidence of this whatsoever. So they're in effect saying, look, we can't get in there because Israel isn't allowing independent media, isn't allowing international media, isn't allowing independent investigations in this case. But they highlight what happened in the past to show Israel's pattern of deceit in terms of claims regarding that. And then they go through the actions, attacks on hospitals, humanitarian facilities. They also include attacks on the West Bank, for example, where there is no Hamas, literally hundreds of attacks since October. So they give the specifics in the current case. And then, as you say, they go through the genocidal intent, which is typically the hardest part to prove in a genocide case, because how do you get inside somebody's head saying, oh, they mean to, eradicate, a group in whole or in part, being the definition of genocide. But they go through the statements from the defense, so-called defense minister, no food, no electricity, no water. The president of Israel, talking about, there are no innocents in Gaza. The prime minister invoking the biblical mandate to smite Amalek, which means, eradicate an entire group of people. So they really go through a great deal of information, and they back it up time and time again.
It's interesting that in the days after the filing, news stories began coming out, not of course about the filing in Western and US media, but somewhat in international media about Israel being concerned and about Israel's plans to respond and Israel pressuring nations to oppose this. What possibly can be Israel's defense here?
It's different, difficult for me to speculate about that. The latest thing I saw was that they were planning on showing video of what happened, the Hamas attack on October 7th. I guess in an attempt to, be more graphic. I don't know if the South Africans are planning on showing video. I mean, the Israelis have gone through this whole process of antics that they've been doing at the United Nations. Recently at the UN, one of their representative went there with us, a yellow star of David, as if he's somehow persecuted, as a way of, effectively, defending himself from accusations of slaughtering innocent, thousands of innocent people. So this government is really incredibly shameless. So, I don't know what kind of possible antics they're going to attempt to do. I've heard some people be very pessimistic about what's going to happen with the court because, the US and Israel can pressure countries and judges associated with countries. The president of the court right now is a former State Department official. There are, it could come down to real politic in terms of what each country that's on the court thinks it can get out of this. I'm not an expert on the court. International lawyers who are somewhat more optimistic than some people who have, thought that Israel would come out, surprisingly unscathed here. So, I'm genuinely not sure, but I assume that Israel will attempt all kinds of antics to distract from the core question at hand, which is substantial case of South Africa laying out the evidence that Israel is committing genocide.
We are speaking with Sam Husseini. You can find him online at husseini.substack.com. We're talking about the prosecution of Israel for genocide at the International Court of Justice. Hearings happening on Thursday and Friday. Sam, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm a little surprised at the notion of Israel playing videos of October 7th as a defense of genocide. I know that's been the media approach by Israel, by the U.S. government, by the corporate media has been, but revenge is, our culture's highest ideal, but it's not a legal defense of any action. So it can't be revenge. It has to be that somehow showing this video indicates that the genocide is defensive, that it's, that it's not gross mass slaughter of random people, that it's not violations of the rules of all the laws against war and the Geneva Conventions, that somehow it's defensive. And that seems far more difficult to argue than the glories of revenge, which it's fine to argue on CNN.
Yeah, a couple of things. It's possible that Israel is going to. I'm just saying that that's one of the things that I heard. So I don't know what they're actually going to do. I mean, that could be sure. Spin and disinformation as well. It's possible that Israel could view the hearings as a media spectacle. And try to use them in that way, and perhaps hope that their behind the scenes pressure on the judges is what actually carries the day. But that's speculative on my part. I hesitate to stress the revenge aspect of things, to be totally honest. I mean, I'm sure that that's a visceral response to some Israelis. But in terms of the Israeli establishment, I mean, I think that they are pursuing long-term goals,
of
attempting to damage, to put it lightly, Palestinian society as much as possible for the purpose of acquiring the territory and the water and, being a settler expansionist state. That's what they do. They drive out people. That's what Israel has done since 1948, and this is simply the latest and perhaps most horrific stage of that endeavor.
Sam, you are a participant in and an observer and critic of the media. Have you ever seen a contrast as stark as the Western media coverage of the lives of Israelis and the lives of Palestinians? Have you ever seen dozens of people valued so dramatically higher than tens of thousands of people. It seems starker than I can recall.
You might be right. I'll be frank, David. I really haven't consumed a ton of. I used to consume a lot of mainstream media, and I don't as much anymore. But I mean, this goes back to me for many, many years. I mean, I remember, during the full first Gulf War when they were slaughtering Iraqis, and then Saddam Hussein would launch a Scud missile, and an Israeli would get a heart attack or something, and and that was the what the mainstream media put a human face to. So I mean, this kind of pattern has certainly been there. It may well be worse now. I just honestly haven't been consuming
Yeah.
I mean I should say one aspect of things that the South Africans don't get into but has really stuck in my head is the propagandistic nature, though, of what Israel did from the very beginning. That is to they put out the story of the beheaded
Babies.
babies. And that, to me, in a sense, is part of the genocidal intent, right? Why did they put that out? They put that out because they knew they intended to slaughter a lot of Palestinians. And if they put out this story of beheaded babies, they knew that that would buy them more time to get away with more carnage. And same thing with the whole rape allegations, which I haven't followed closely, but seems to at minimum be exaggerated, and if not largely baseless still at this point. I haven't seen any evidence of that, but I keep the mainstream media keep bringing that up, and people keep poking holes in it. So you have the the propaganda is almost a key into the part of the genocidal intent, right? Why lie? Why lie about these atrocities except to try to buy more leeway to commit more carnage?
Right. And completely open and shameless about the opportunism, not this is a horrible tragedy, but this is our 9/11,
Right.
meaning this justifies complete
Whatever.
lawless barbarity without limit, because the US set that example. And you had one host on MSNBC ask an Israeli official, have you not killed any babies, not killed any children? And the solution was to kick that guy off of MSNBC, get rid of his show. That solved that.
You've seen that. I mean, you had, I mean, different sectors of the media operate in different ways. So you had the, sort of the rise of some Arab and Muslim voices on MSNBC, which were sort of useful to the establishment if they were, demonizing Russia or something like that, because they sort of went along with that program, at least tacitly. And now that those same hosts are, not going along with the establishment program 100% of the time,
Yeah.
and saying, "Hold on, we're gonna, I want to try to humanize the Palestinians here a little bit." Suddenly, those same hosts are on the out. So that kind of gives you a glimpse as to how insidious the whole system is, and how it uses people, and so on.
There's a couple things, Sam Husseini, that strike me about the term genocide here. One is that, contrary to everybody's beliefs, it seems pretty clear that the proportion of the deaths in wars like the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the proportion of the deaths that were US deaths was actually smaller than the proportion of the deaths in the genocide in Gaza that are Israeli deaths. I mean, these were even more one-sided slaughters of men, women, children, babies, the elderly. But no one pulled out the word genocide. Yet here, and this is the other thing that strikes me, you have this quintessential case of genocide where everybody's calling it genocide and it's happening very quickly in front of everyone's eyes. And nobody says never again. For decades, we're told this is just a central pillar of Western morality, never again. It's pulled out as war propaganda. We have to attack Libya because genocide. But it's just abandoned. What? How are either of these things possible if I'm right about either of them?
It's a really fascinating point, David. I mean, you have, I mean, you had a lot of civilian, deaths, killings in Iraq and in Afghanistan, without a doubt. And it would be interesting to see in retrospect if it would make sense to lay out the genocide convention in that. Technically, you couldn't, because at least not against the United States, because the US has a reservation on the relevant article. Legally speaking, not ethically speaking, but legally speaking, the US doesn't submit to the adjudication of the International Court of Justice on the Genocide Convention. Israel does, South Africa does, and that's why we have the current suit.
There is an argument that lawyers will make, and supporters of the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons make this argument, that there are treaty obligations and laws that suggest that the United States must abide by international law when there is a global consensus around an international law, regardless of whether the United States has ratified the treaty at all, never mind added its reservations, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly could well have merit. I mean, you are seeing, I don't know what the proportions are of, Hamas fighters being killed vis-a-vis Iraqi soldiers being killed, if that's the alleged goal of war. I mean, I don't believe that. I don't believe that the Israeli goal is necessarily Hamas fight. When people say it's indiscriminate,
Course not.
I think they're targeting journalists. I suspect they're targeting the infrastructure of Palestinian society. So,
Clearly.
and so I think that what you're saying is right in terms of that those things could fit under genocide. The case of Palestinians is a bit different because, I mean, for all of the U.S. designs in Afghanistan and Iraq, they didn't seem to want to, do a settler colonial enterprise, right? They wanted to, destabilize, to shatter society, to reconfigure it, but they didn't want to, settle it with people from Brooklyn, per se.
Only
Whereas,
within military bases.
yes, true. True, but not, and which are, still there, at least in Iraq. Whereas Israel is a settler colonial expansionist project. So there is a distinction there. But I don't think that that necessarily changes the assessment that you're making, that they both could well constitute genocide.
I think so. In any case, one-sided slaughters is an accurate description. Sam Husseini, the thing that I've enjoyed most from your work in recent months has not been your wonderful assistance and wisdom on this project, but your questioning of State Department spokespeople at their press conferences. It's just shocking to have someone in the room asking a question that isn't part of the show. It's like the magician's got the room full of assistants, and there's this guy sneaks in who's from the audience. Talk a little bit, a minute, we've got maybe 4 minutes left. What has been your recent experience in that place?
Well, it's been rough. The main spokesperson actually hasn't called on me since October, Matt Miller. But for a week he was out, and the assistant was there, and he called on me for 4 days straight, and I did everything that I possibly could with that. I actually first raised the Genocide Convention in one of my questions there. That was part of what got it galvanized. And I asked them if they were leaning on the Palestinian Authority to not invoke it, because the Palestinians could have invoked this. We waited and we waited, and South Africa finally did. The Palestinians could have done it themselves. And I presume it was because they were being threatened in doing so. And so I asked the State Department exactly that question. And I also asked them about the Geneva Conventions. The State Department seems to not reckon. They keep saying we want Israel to abide by international law, but when I ask them what law, they won't say. They won't say that they recognize the Geneva Conventions as applying to occupied territory. So if the Geneva Conventions, which are what protect people in occupied territory, if they don't apply, then there's really no law that Israel is being constrained by. So it's been great when they call on me, and when they don't, I've hollered stuff out occasionally with mixed results. I've been suffering from bronchitis lately, so I haven't been up to fighting in
Outing at
that
them.
way. But if I have to do that, I'll do that. I'm seeing some other journalists get in there and ask some questions, not quite with the confrontational approach that I do, but at least some other things that go off script. It's been funny for me too, getting mainstream journalists come up to me afterwards thanking me, for things that they don't feel like they're wanting to do. So.
It's I hope that someone follows your example, or that you are there and they call on you, or you force them to listen to you on this topic as it moves forward. We've got just 2 minutes left, but if there's governments threatening other governments on this, it's not just Israel, it's the United States more than likely, and we don't know about it, but the majority of the weapons are from the United States. The dozens of defenses and vetoes at the United Nations are from the United States. The Israel couldn't do this without the United States. And if Israel is guilty of genocide, some other governments are complicit, right?
Absolutely, absolutely, they are. And so, what we hope to see is that, assuming that the International Court of Justice does its job, and that other countries, we should emphasize other countries, and I have a whole page on this, and you've done great work on this, getting other countries to issue declarations to back up South Africa, so that it's not just South Africa doing this, it's other countries joining in. Other things can open up, like universal jurisdiction, other countries prosecuting individuals, the UN General Assembly. If the International Criminal Court refuses to move, you can have the UN General Assembly form a tribunal. In the past, you've had the Security Council form tribunals for Rwanda and Yugoslavia. There's nothing to stop the General Assembly from forming a tribunal to go after individuals. So hopefully a lot of other avenues to get some justice here can be opened up.
Absolutely. We will have links to Sam Husseini up at talkworldradio.org, and we will have links to where you can take actions online on this issue. Sam Husseini, thanks for everything you're doing and for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thank you for all your great work, David.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.